You're going to have to forgive me, but I can't let this pass. I was really interested in the D-Day commemoration ceremonies that took place on Thursday, some of the reports on Friday, with all the political leaders and other dignitaries, including from Canada. But I couldn't help but think of what our veterans fought for. As Queen Elizabeth so eloquently put it, they were fighting in the cause of freedom. And then my thoughts immediately moved to how casual we are with all those freedoms. Chief among them is the assault on free speech. I tried to think of a single politician who attended the ceremonies, including from Canada, who have said a word about the increasing attacks on what Thomas Jefferson called the foundation of all other freedoms, and that's free speech. Not a word about the students on college campuses who demand that speakers be canceled, that professors be sanctioned because they challenge today's progressive dogma. Heck, we see it in the government itself with efforts to censor or at least shame people who hold views they don't like. Politicians who think, along with some academics and others, who consider themselves part of the moral and intellectual elite, that they're so special they should be in charge of what you and I are allowed to say. I mean, the pretexts are many, but the end result of curtailing free speech is the same, the inevitable march toward approved speech. I mean, there's so many other examples, though, that are a spin-off of this. I think you're naive if you think the media outlets who receive a chunk of the $600 million and that media bailout fund aren't going to espouse government-approved views. And as if to validate my concerns, in the same week we're honoring the sacrifice of all those who fought and died on D-Day, the Parliamentary Justice Committee on Free Speech looked to limit the testimony of free speech advocates testifying before the committee. They took it off TV. They spent way more time going after the people who participated for their past views than talking about the issue at hand. The point that eludes many people is that the cost is not just political or social, but as President Barack Obama stated in the commencement speech at Howard University, free speech is critical for a well-functioning economy. A lot of people don't make that connection. George Mason University professor Adam Millsap sums up that relationship between free speech and economic progress by saying, in quotes, "As an economic leader, we rely on the free exchange of ideas and the information for the serendipitous discoveries that increase our standard of living. And because of this, the long-term costs of stifling speech are larger than commonly recognized." Decades earlier, George Bernard Shaw stated, "All progress is initiated by challenging current conceptions and executed by supplanting existing institutions. Consequently, the first condition of progress is the removal of censorship." Milton Friedman, who The Economist calls the most influential economist of the second half of the 20th century, probably all of it, argues in one of his most celebrated works, Capitalism and Freedom, that the free exchange of ideas is essential for innovation and economic progress. How about a real-world example of the connection between freedom and the economy? It's courtesy of University of Michigan economist Mark Perry. Listen to the difference in economic growth per person of those people living under a communist or totalitarian regime compared with those living with more individual freedom. In 1991, just after the fall of the Berlin Wall, the economic growth per person was so huge in the German Republic, or in the German public rather, that it was literally at the 10-to-12-to-1 ratio. In North Korea, same time frame, $700 per person in economic growth, compared to over 7,600 in South Korea. Between Hungary at 3,550 per person, and Austria at 23,510. Cuba, $450. Mexico, $3,610. Cambodia, $150. Thailand, $2,110 per person. The evidence is everywhere. I mean, the World Economic Freedom Rankings, 2017-18, by the Fraser Institute, found that countries in the top quarter in terms of economic freedom have average incomes about $55,000 compared to only $7,800 for people living in the 25% of countries at the bottom in terms of freedom. In addition, poor people have significantly higher incomes in countries with freedom. It's incredible. Life expectancy is higher, on average 17 years. As economists Curtis Simon, Clark Nardellini conclude in their study on the growth of English cities, they looked at the 19th and 20th century, but it was the same conclusion. The creativity of the market economy, The increasing returns, so important in the modern growth theory, in large part arises from what happens when people with information get together and talk. The talk is necessary to turn information into productive knowledge. You know, our standard of living is founded on freedom, rooted in free speech. But it's incredible to me there are few defenders in the political realm. They are like the majority of us who seem to think that it's someone else's job to defend free speech. Well, thank goodness our veterans who fought the Nazis on D-Day didn't think that way. 329 died on D-Day itself, an estimated something like 5,000 in the battle for Normandy. First, the Queen said, for our freedom. My question is, which one of the politicians attending the ceremony or in Parliament are ready to speak up in defense of free speech, especially for views they don't like? I'm afraid the answer is very, very few, and it comes at a big cost.